Hello, I'm Linda Huang. This is number 0135, the Stuff File program, with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of The Stuff File Program, number 0135. And coming up on this edition of The Stuff File Program, BJ Gallagher is back on the show. She's the author of Being Buddha at Work.
When I first started reading Buddha about 12 years ago or so, I guess, the thing that struck me was he was really one smart psychologist. He really understood how the human mind works, what makes human beings tick. The second thing that struck me was we haven't changed much in 2,500 years. We're pretty much the same as we were back then. We dress a little differently, but as far as I can tell from his writings, I don't read anything that doesn't describe human beings today.
Patty Farmer is the author of The Persian Room Presents.
It wasn't only a room, it was the time. Even though the Persian Room spanned decades, it was just a different time. It was a time when people got dressed up and the women had their hair done and put on their most beautiful jewels, and the men put on tuxedos, and there were manners of conduct, and it was just a different time.
Darren Martin is the creator of the website itslonggone.com, a site where people post about items they've lost. Anything unusual ever get posted?
One time we had a gas mask posted on there, and I don't know why one person would have a gas mask. And then we had somebody lost their dancing lingerie stuff. That was kind of weird. And then somebody posted $1 million reward on the website. So that got a lot of media attention because somebody being a mining company. So that got a lot of attention.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff. And, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0135, was Linda Huang, who is a producer at Global News. She works out of Edmonton, and she works on the show that I work on the weekends, the Global News show here in Montreal. It's a long distance kind of a thing. She's also, by the way, a blogger and an online journalist. She's got several websites, including a wedding blog. She's going to be a bride in the not too distant future. And she's also a cat lady. But enough about that. Thank you very much, Linda, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. The Stuff File show is now heard, as you know, folks, on Stitcher Smart Radio, which allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your mobile device, iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and beyond. So go to Stitcher.com or your app store and get the Stitcher app. On demand and on the go, Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? In Davis, Oklahoma, 77-year-old Jimmy Hawkeye Jeter has been charged with a crime against nature in connection with an incident in which he allegedly violated a pig. The incident occurred in an agriculture barn on property belonging to Davis Public Schools, and the sexual assault of the show pig was actually caught on a surveillance camera. Now, according to court documents, Jeter walked into the pig pen, unzipped his pants, appeared to pull something out of his pants, then bend over a female pig. When questioned by police, Jeter denied having sex with the pig, saying, and this is his quote, "I just stuck my finger up her private. That's all I did." Well, I think that's enough, pal. Jeter has a previous criminal record and served prison time in 2008 for cattle theft and also arrested in 2011 for allegedly stealing horses. And of course, in light of this story, one can't help but wonder what he was stealing the cows and horses for. Meanwhile, it's rare that someone loses their life over contraceptives, but it happened in Detroit's West Side. Michael Haynes II was trying to buy condoms at a BP gas station when he decided the price was too high and argued he could get them for less elsewhere. Well, Haynes allegedly asked to return the box he had just purchased or get a better deal at the counter. When the store clerk would not accept a return or lower the price, Haynes allegedly began shoving items from shelves and acting violently. In response, the cashier pulled a gun and started shooting. The cashier told police he meant to fire a warning shot, but instead he hit Haynes. Well, I guess Haynes has been officially warned now. A friend of Haynes drove him to the hospital, where he died from the gunshot wound. Police are still reviewing the surveillance footage and have the cashier in custody. Meanwhile, protesters have started appearing at the BP station. Yes, hot lead, the ultimate birth control. You know, probably not every famous person deserves to have their own bobblehead doll, like, say, people who assassinate presidents of the United States. Believe it or not, bobblehead dolls of John Wilkes Booth, complete with a handgun, have now been removed from the shelves of the Gettysburg National Military Park's Visitors Center bookstore. Yes, for some reason, these morons thought Americans would love a little bobblehead keepsake of the man who shot and killed President Abraham Lincoln. The Booth bobbleheads were available for only a week before the park superintendent, the foundation president, and the bookstore manager decided they shouldn't be for sale. Wow, took you guys a week to figure that out, huh? Well, could I perhaps interest you in our Lee Harvey Oswald bobblehead line? No? Perhaps the Joseph Mengele bobblehead line? No? I can get you a great deal on Osama bin Laden bobbleheads. No? Are you sure? Morons. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our first guest on the show. In Melbourne, Australia, four unidentified men have just seriously raised the bar for Dine and Dash. After ordering expensive drinks at the Vieux du Monde restaurant located in the Rialto Towers skyscraper, the four skipped out of their tab by jumping off a 55th floor balcony. Nope, it wasn't a suicide pact. Turns out the four were experienced base jumpers who had parachutes hidden under their business suits and a getaway car waiting at the bottom. Shannon Bennett, owner of the Vieux du Monde, said, "I ran from the kitchen into the room and I just saw a flash of them jumping over, and at that stage, none of us knew what the hell was going on." Bennett added, "They had cameras on their helmets, so I'm sure we'll all see it on YouTube soon. I hope they are caught. They need to pay their bill." Oh, really? I mean, when you think about it, this restaurant now has a whole bunch of publicity. Maybe you're not in on it, pal. Just thinking, you know, conspiracy theories and all. Anyway, all four managed to make their escape, despite one of them having to be freed by the others after he got stuck in a tree. Victoria Police Deputy Commissioner Kieran Walsh criticized the stunt, saying, "It's not cool, it's stupid." Well, actually, Commissioner, and no, we don't condone breaking the law, but you have to admit, somewhere deep down inside, it's pretty awesome. Yeah. But, you know, kids, don't do this at home. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program. Sociologist BJ Gallagher is back on the show with us. Back in January, we had her on the program to talk about social graces. And at that time, I said we'd have her back on the show to talk about her latest book called Being Buddha at Work, 101 Ancient Truths on Change, Stress, Money, and Success. Well, that time is now. So BJ's on the line with us right now from California. Hi, BJ.
Hi, Peter.
Nice to have you back on the show.
Oh, thanks for inviting me back. It's always great to talk to you.
So these 101 truths that you've found through the teachings of Buddha, they really work in modern-day work situations?
They do. When I first started reading Buddha about 12 years ago or so, I guess, the thing that struck me was, well, two things struck me. One is he was really one smart psychologist. He really understood how the human mind works, what makes human beings tick. The second thing that struck me was we haven't changed much in 2,500 years. We're pretty much the same as we were back then. We dress a little differently, but as far as I can tell from his writings, I don't read anything that doesn't describe human beings today.
You co-wrote this book with Franz Metcalf, correct?
Yes.
So that in itself is a working relationship. Any of the situations you came up with applicable to working with each other?
Oh, that's a great question. That's a great question. Franz, it was really interesting working with him because he is he's a Buddhist scholar. He teaches comparative religion at LA, at Cal State LA, and he didn't know anything about the world of business, which is why our publishers teamed us up together, because I know a lot about the world of business, but I didn't know anything about Buddhism. And so in Buddhism, they have a principle called beginner's mind. So we actually each brought our beginner's mind to the partnership. He had a beginner's mind about business, and I had a beginner's mind about Buddhism. And so we each learned a lot from each other. And it was actually an asset that we didn't know anything about each other's fields.
Now, what is which dilemma out of the 101 would you say is the hardest to tackle, and why?
It depends on who you are. We included a lot of chapters. I guess if I were sort of to pick what most people are going to be struggling with, it's issues around change. And we included a lot of chapters about change, about outsourcing, losing your job, looking for a new job, losing your life savings, losing your home. Those are the things that are really causing people a lot of pain today, that are caused by the changes in the workplace.
Now, those changes, the ones you just described, are the kinds that are usually imposed upon one person. There's not much you can do about it, but deal with it. What about changes at work that aren't so drastic, just changes in the way things are done, changes in the hierarchy, things like that, things that you have to work around while still in that same working situation?
Any kind of change that you don't initiate yourself, you're likely to find difficult. And that's true. I'm using the generic you, not you, Peter, but you as in human beings, that there's this notion that people don't like change. It's really only half true. We like the change that we initiate. So if I decide to change jobs or change houses or change haircuts or change spouses or whatever, I may actually like that change because I'm the one who decided to do it and I'm in charge of that change. The change we don't like is the change that somebody else decided, or it just happened, like technology changes and things like that. And then, because the real issue, it's not change we don't like, it's feeling out of control. It's feeling helpless. It's feeling like you don't have solid ground under your feet. That's what people don't like.
Since you brought the business aspect to this book and Franz brought the Buddha aspect to this book, how has writing this book changed you?
Oh, it's changed me enormously. It's in many very positive ways. One of the core teachings of Buddhism is impermanence, that everything is transitory. Things come into existence, things go out of existence. Because like most other human beings, I like things stable and predictable, and I want to know that the sun's coming up tomorrow and that I'm going to get a paycheck at the end of the week. And, you know, I like a lot of things in my life predictable. And what Buddhism teaches is that nothing is stable forever. So there isn't a person who won't die or leave you, a job you won't lose sooner or later, money that can't be lost, corporations that can't be lost. I mean, everything is impermanent. And once I got that, I felt this big sigh of relief, like, oh, okay, well then I'm going to quit searching for permanence. I'm going to quit trying to get things to, quote, settle down, when things settle down, and to really learn to dance with change, because that's the way everything is. Everything is always changing, even when we don't perceive it.
So, having said that, how do you live a life this way without becoming, for lack of a better term, a chronic pessimist?
I actually find Buddhism a very optimistic religion, a very optimistic philosophy, a very optimistic way to live and work, because Buddhism also, some of the other core aspects are compassion and wisdom and interconnectedness. Buddha taught that it looks like we're separate from other people and from other things, but we're really not. The metaphor we use in the book is that if I'm the thumb on my hand, it looks like the other four fingers are separate from the thumb. I have this illusion of separateness, but if I trace the fingers and the thumb down to their base, oh, they're connected by the palm of the hand, and there's so there's this interconnectedness, and they're not separate, even though at first glance they look separate. Well, that's the way it is with people, too. So it's the same gospel that Jesus taught, but in different language. Remember Jesus said, and so you do unto the least of these people, you do unto me, and judge not lest ye be judged, because Jesus was also preaching that we are all one and the same. And when you judge your brother, you're really judging yourself. And when you're kind to another, you're really being kind to yourself, because we are all one. It's kind of hard for us Westerners to wrap our minds around that. But it's really true. And so, like the Dalai Lama says, my religion is very simple. My religion is kindness. And if we could, if people just got one thing from the book we wrote, it would be to help create a kinder, gentler workplace.
Would you say this is all even more so important with the economy, not just nationally, but globally, the way it is?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What we're seeing in the global economy is how interconnected we are. There's an ancient saying about a butterfly flaps its wings as it flies over the Himalayas and a hurricane happens on the other side of the world. That no man is an island, and no organization is an island, and no country is an island. We are all deeply, deeply interconnected and interrelated, and we can't do something and say it doesn't affect anybody else, or we're going to go it alone. That, like it or not, we really are all in this together.
The book is called Being Buddha at Work, 101 Ancient Truths on Change, Stress, Money, and Success, co-written by B.J. Gallagher along with Franz Metcalf. And B.J., I thank you once again for being on the program. It's always a pleasure and thrill to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you, Peter. I love talking with you.
Sociologist B.J. Gallagher, author of Being Buddha at Work, 101 Ancient Truths on Change, Stress, Money, and Success. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0135, and you'll find links to her website, plus links to Amazon.com, where you can order her book directly for the Kindle.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
From Montreal, Canada, and spanning the globe like a butterfly on speed, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of The Persian Room Presents. Plus, we'll meet the founder of itslonggone.com. And of course, there's an idiot of the day and lots more Stuff File news right here, right now. And a quick reminder that we are indeed on Stitcher Smart Radio. And you can get the Stitcher app at any app store. And when you download it, you have a chance to win $100. Just hit the promo code box when you download it and enter Stuff File. Stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, so that's S-T-U-P-H-F-I-L-E, and you get automatically entered to win $100. And get great radio at the same time. Not only the Stuff File program, but about 5,000 other shows. As a matter of fact, more than 5,000 other shows. So, go and get the app, and don't forget to put in the promo code Stuff File. Okay? Back to the Stuff File news. Collier County, Florida sheriff's deputies responded to a report of a man pulling out a gun after a woman told him his vehicle was smoking. When they arrived, they found Mark Losher, age 51, still sitting in the driver's seat of his car with a woman in the passenger seat. Deputies had difficulty getting him to comply with their orders, and during the process, Losher told them he was half orangutan and needed to call the fusion center to ask about his monkey blood. He also said that he was the director of the CIA, Elvis Presley's brother, and a good friend of President Bush, who he claims has the same attorney as he does. Losher's passenger was released, and deputies found a gun and bullets in Losher's vehicle, but no identification to show a connection to the CIA. Well, duh, they don't carry identification at the CIA. But I digress. John Christopher Champion, age 22, entered a Chiefland, Florida gas station in a motorized wheelchair. Then, according to police, he pulled a knife on the 54-year-old woman behind the counter and demanded money from the register. The clerk told police that she struggled with Champion and stabbed him in the leg 3 times before he overpowered her. He left the store carrying a 12-pack of beer and a roll of electrical tape. I have no idea. Don't ask. Total value about $20. Police found Champion stuck in deep sand behind the store drinking a beer. He told police that he had told the clerk to push the button that summoned law enforcement because police would not arrest a handicapped person. Nice try. He was arrested and charged with armed robbery and aggravated battery. Okay, I know this might sound politically incorrect, but if you were being threatened with a knife by a guy in a motorized wheelchair, and in the ensuing struggle you managed to get the knife away from him and use it, don't you think that since you don't know what his affliction actually is, it might be prudent to stab him someplace else other than his legs? You know, someplace where it might cause damage or at the very least hurt? I'm just saying. Anyway, when Dorsey McFadden visited the Blowtoad restaurant in Carytown, Virginia, that's not a good name for a restaurant, but anyway, she found Blue Ball Pizza on the menu. When she asked the waiter about the name and one of the ingredients, swing steak, he chuckled and said their staff came up with the name together and just thought it was appropriate. Without any further question, she ordered the pizza. It had a funny name, but I didn't think too much about it, McFadden said. Later, I came to find out that the steak was bull testicles. Get it? Swing steak? Anyway, now the health department is investigating the incident. Restaurants must disclose the major allergens and say whether or not their food items can be safely prepared. This according to Chris Gordon, an environmental health manager for the state's Department of Health. It's not a question of allergies for me, but it's a question of full disclosure, said McFadden. Certainly, I think there are some people who, for religious reasons or personal reasons, just wouldn't want to eat that. The restaurant managers said they will continue to do all they can to make sure customers are informed and walk away satisfied. Well, I'm thinking the bull didn't walk away satisfied, but anyway, I digress. Emergency responders in Georgia said they rescued a woman who fell down her apartment's garbage chute while trying to retrieve her dropped cell phone. Dunwoody police said rescue crews responded to the Gables Metropolitan Apartments when the woman fell while trying to reach down the chute for her phone and ended up stuck between the first and second floors of the building. DeKalb County Fire Department rescuers said they moved the building's trash compactor, which was blocking the woman from falling to the floor the rest of the way down the chute, and retrieved her just before she hit the ground. The woman was taken to a local hospital for treatment. This is the latest, by the way, in a growing trend of stuff file stories. We've had people doing everything from getting a hand stuck in a toilet in Japan to dying in a drain pipe in Detroit, all for a cell phone. Trust me, in time, there will be a lot more of these stories to come. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? The Persian Room was a New York City premier cabaret venue for four decades. Patty Farmer has written a book, the first in a series about great New York landmarks, called The Persian Room Presents. She joins us on the line from California right now. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Peter. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on. The Persian Room had such an illustrious history for such a long period of time. I'm just wondering, generally speaking, are there even places like that anymore?
You know, Peter, there really aren't. I think it wasn't only a room, it was the time. You know, it was a different time, even though the Persian Room spanned decades, you know, basically 40s, 50s, 60s, with the 30s and the 70s bookending it. It was just a different time. It was a time when people got dressed up and the women had their hair done and put on their most beautiful jewels, and the men put on tuxedos, and there were manners of conduct, and it was just a different time.
And I would assume, too, that for those who frequented the place, and by that I mean, you know, the movers and shakers, the people in the entertainment world, it was a place where they could feel comfortable and safe as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Persian Room in New York was like many other clubs on both the West Coast and New York area, that at that time it was similar almost to Las Vegas, where even performers after their last show would get their friends and family and head over to the Persian Room and watch the late show, because they didn't have that feeling, you know, that they'd be mobbed. They had that sense of security, exactly like you mentioned.
Well, what made you decide to write this book, The Persian Room Presents, and the other ones that you plan to follow up with?
Well, you know, the Plaza Hotel in New York City celebrated its 100th birthday just a few years ago. And gosh, Peter, you know, 100 years of anything, it got me thinking of all the changes the hotel had seen and all the different places that had come and gone in those 100 years. You know, we're going back to when we had a horse-drawn taxi cab sitting out in front of the hotel. And I started talking to people and asking them about the Plaza, their memories of the Plaza, and I kept hearing about this room called the Persian Room. And I'm just a history nerd. I started doing research. I actually put a research team together, and we researched and found out what it was all about. And then I set out to talk to as many people as I could that actually performed there through the years. And the result is just a journey back into a magical time.
So being a self-proclaimed history nerd, as you say, it must have been like panning for gold for you. So what were some of the nuggets you found in putting this book together?
Well, 1934 was when the Persian Room opened, and it was really just the evolution of this nightclub. In the 1930s, it was primarily dance teams that was the main entertainment. And it wasn't until the early 40s where we had headline entertainers came into being the norm. And the first headline entertainer at the Persian Room was Hildegard, the incomparable Hildegard. But then each generation had its share of top entertainment. You know, the 50s, Andy Williams and his brothers performed there. The 60s was a treasure trove with Patti Page and Connie Stevens and Eddie Fisher and Life in Manila and all the greats of the time. But, you know, Peter, you asked me what was the one thing, and maybe I was digressing a little bit. I think the one thing that struck me in talking to these amazing entertainers was the work ethic. You know, they all started working so young, and many of them, like Tony Butala from the Letterman, and again, Andy Williams, Leslie Gore, and a few others who I can't name off the top of my head, they started working at when they were still little kids, you know, age 8. And when I was invited to their homes, now, of course, they're in their 70s, 80s, some even 90s, and they're still working and still loving it. And they're working because they do love it, not because they need to. You know, I've been to their homes and they live very, very beautifully. And I just think the work ethic is something that is an example to everybody. It's something that we don't see today.
Not only, as you say, did a lot of performers go to the Persian Room after they did their live shows, wherever they may have been in New York City, but I would assume during the heyday of the Persian Room was also around the time of what we like to consider the golden age of television, when there was a lot of live television being done, and a lot of it coming out of New York. So I would assume a lot of those performers were involved as well.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Jack Benny was there all the time. Just name a celebrity. They always had celebrities in the audience every single night. That was part of the program, where whoever was headlining took time to introduce those who wanted to be introduced. And when you read my book, you'll find that there were several who didn't want to be introduced. But every single night you had the greatest from every field. I mean, and also, you know, some of the shadier characters, you know, gangsters frequented it, politicians, radio, stage, screen stars, everybody was there.
A lot of interesting artifacts and information in the book The Persian Room presents, but there's also another interesting aspect, and that is where a portion of the proceeds are going for the book. Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. A portion of the proceeds from each sale goes towards a charity called Child Help. And it's a 50-year organization. It's national. And they've been fighting the very, very hard fight for the prevention and treatment of child abuse. It's an amazing cause. And I invite everyone to go to the website and check it out. It's childhelp.org. Total financial packages up there. You can see that 87 to 92 cents out of every dollar they collect goes directly to the programs to help the kids.
And that organization, again, you say, is childhelp.org, correct?
Correct.
Now, besides the fact that the Persian Room is such a part of New York history, I understand part of your interest in this is you had a sort of a little bit of an Eloise complex growing up. You wanted to be that little girl living in the plaza, and you actually ended up living in the plaza.
I did, Peter, absolutely. You know, there's been a lot of discussion whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, but in 2007, the plaza went condo. or that was the plan. A buyer came in and bought the hotel and had planned to turn the whole hotel into condos, but New York wasn't really hot with that idea. So they ended up only being able to convert 150 of the rooms to condos, and the rest remains as a landmark hotel. And I was lucky enough to be able to get one of the condos in the Plaza, and it had been a dream since the first time my mother took me to Palm Court for tea. And I think every young girl in that area, their mother took them for tea at the Plaza at one time or another, and you got to dress up and put your gloves on and your best Sunday school manners and a dream. And as you said, I was lucky enough.
The Persian Room, I should say, as you say, closed in 1975. What brought about its demise?
The U.S. was in the worst recession that we had been in for 40 years, and that sounds a little familiar to, I think, to everybody listening to your show, you know, because we're having similar problems now, although things are getting better. But it was the worst recession, and New York got hit harder than a lot of the rest of the country. Crime was running rampant. Unions, were very powerful, so they put a lot of pressure on hotels as to what they could do as far as their entertainment went. They had to have so many musicians, and the costs were exorbitant. So it was just a perfect storm. Bad economy, crime. Bigger venues were coming into popularity also. You know, entertainers thought that if they could perform at a 20,000, a better option than a week in a smaller venue.
But I'm certain
times change.
Yeah, I'm certain also the problem with that too is it's less intimate, which is part of the problem today anyway. But that's, I guess, a whole other show.
Right, you're absolutely correct.
The book is called The Persian Room Presents. It's written by Patty Farmer, and again, part of the proceeds go to Child Help, and people can check out the website for Child Help. That's at childhelp.org. I thank you very much, Patty, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Peter. I enjoy your show so much, and again, that's another dream of mine I can cross off my list, being on your show. So thank you so much.
And thank you very much for those kind words. Patty Farmer, author of The Persian Room Presents. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0135, and you'll find links to Child Help that Patty mentioned, plus also links to Amazon.com, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob Dorigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Did you know that the Girl Scouts are celebrating their 100th anniversary this month? The Girl Scouts are an important part of our communities, and is there anyone who hasn't enjoyed their famous cookies? The Girl Scouts have seen a lot of changes in the past century, but nothing illustrates the changes quite like this next story. The leader of the Girl Scouts in my metropolitan area told me several years ago that they have to sell 32,000 boxes of cookies every year just to raise enough money to pay for their liability insurance to protect themselves from lawsuits. That's right, 32,000 boxes, and Girl Scouts in some other cities have to sell even more. Let's be fair, the Girl Scouts aren't alone. Such respected organizations as Little League Baseball and the YMCA also have to devote substantial portions of their budgets to liability insurance, all because lawsuits, unfortunately, have become as much a part of life in America as Girl Scout cookies. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for now and forever, unless the Mayans were right.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the founder of the itslonggone.com website. Plus, of course, there is an idiot of the day, but right now, more Stuff File news for your listening pleasure. And here's a story for our resident cat lady, Linda Huang. Hello, Linda. As if Virginia hasn't been in the news enough lately for political chaos, now it appears a cat is running for the Virginia State Senate. That's right. Former Virginia governors George Allen, who is a Republican, and Tim Kaine, who is a Democrat, now face a feline foe. A tabby cat known as Hank is a former street cat and political independent who advocates a job creation platform of milk in every bowl. According to his Twitter account, yes, he has a Twitter account, Hank is also passionate about the creation of a privacy bill of rights and the protection of consumer data. However, the cat pain, get it, cat pain, could have a problem. Federal law requires that Senate candidates be at least 30 years old, and Hank was born in 2003. But one can argue that makes him 52 years old in cat years. After raising over $250 from supporters for the Humane Society of Fairfax County, the kitty candidate is now actively recruiting volunteers to help spread the word by knocking on doors, manning the phones, and staffing polling places on Election Day. If you think the whole idea is nuts and a waste of time, we would like to point out that Bosco Ramos, a black Labrador Rottweiler mix, served as mayor of Sunol, California from 1981 to 1990. And with this being such a contentious election year, this would-be kitty senator may just scratch out a victory. Okay, regular listeners to the show already know how I feel about cats. Linda Huang aside, I'm not a fan. They're little pieces of evil planning to overthrow mankind. Allowing one to govern is just opening the door to their eventual world domination. I'm just saying. Okay, we've heard of all kinds of DUI cases, but this is a new one. Police in Minnesota say a man seen erratically driving a Zamboni at an ice rink had a blood alcohol content of 0.32%. The Apple Valley City Attorney's Office said police were called to the Hayes Ice Arena shortly after 8 p.m. on January 30th on a report of a man erratically driving the ice smoothing machine and hitting the boards while resurfacing the ice between youth games. The driver, Joel Bruss, age 34, told officers he had been drinking at his home earlier in the evening and had driven himself to the ice rink. He agreed to a urine test around 10 p.m. and was found to have a blood alcohol, as I mentioned, of 0.32%. That's four times the legal limit for driving. Bruss has now been charged with four counts of drunken driving and is due to appear in court April 19th. And he has prior drunken driving convictions from 2002 and 1999. Yeah, drinks on ice, that's one thing. But now his life is on the rocks. And in Georgia, Lumpkin County Superior Court Judge David Barrett was presiding over a case in which a woman brought charges of rape and aggravated assault against Scott Sugarman, a former city county sheriff's deputy. But when the victim took to the stand to testify, Judge Barrett told her that she was, quote, killing her case, allegedly because she wasn't cooperating. So to make his point, he pulled out his own gun and pretended to hand it to her, saying, "You might as well just shoot your lawyer." Her attorney quickly objected, "Yeah, good call, pal," and demanded the judge put the weapon away, but Barrett is now under investigation by the State Judicial Qualifications Commission, which probes judge misconduct. Now, Georgia law allows judges to carry concealed weapons into the courtroom, but it's a crime to point a gun at another person if there's no reason to do so. And you thought these kinds of wacky court shenanigans only took place on Boston Legal, huh? And finally, we have just a couple more Stuff File news stories we put together just before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And we put them under the heading of Least Competent Criminals Not Ready for Prime Time Crime. An unidentified man fled and is still at large after attempting to break into a change machine at the Busy Bubbles laundromat in Winter Haven, Florida in January. The surveillance video showed the man shooting at the machine four times with a handgun, but no money came out. And elsewhere, two men were arrested in Albuquerque in January after being caught in the act of a home burglary by a neighbor who called the police. The men were apprehended with various burglarized goodies as they made their getaway in a grocery store shopping cart. Some people just really don't think things through, do they? They could have been the idiots of the day, but that's coming up a little later on. But first, let's get to our last guest here on the Stuff File program for this week. Darren Martin is the man behind a rather innovative website. It's called itslonggone.com, and it's a free online website he created to help you find stuff you've lost. He's on the line with us right now from British Columbia. Hi, Darren.
Hey, how you doing?
Jess Tickety-Boo, thanks for being on the program with us. Interesting concept for a website. What made you come up with this one?
Well, unfortunately, a couple years ago, we got robbed at work, and then one evening we left our garage door open at home, and some crooks came in and took some stuff from our house. And so from that, putting ads out there trying to find my own stuff that had got stolen, I realized that most ads don't stay online very long, and you had to keep chasing your ad and renewing it. So therefore I thought, well, I'm going to create my own website to help people that are in the same shoes as myself, and that's what started it.
And when did you start this?
In 2009.
Okay. So since you started this, what has the response been? And the reason why I bring it up is just recently, for instance, I also work at Global News, and I saw a Global News piece from out in BC on your very site. So what kind of attention and response have you received since 2009?
Well, since 2009, it's been in quite a few newspapers. And yes, like I said, it got on Global TV. And then when it aired on Global TV, it got so many hits, it shut the site down.
Wow.
So it averages about 10 or more postings a day is the average. So there's almost 6,000 postings now. It's slowly creeping in the U.S., but it's all about people talking to tell people about the site, because it's hard to find it if you don't search for it.
Okay, so the site is called, again, itslonggone.com. So what are you hoping to accomplish by putting up stuff on the site?
Well, I hope to help people get reunited with their things that they lose. People lose their cats, their dogs, their iPhones, everything from that, like excavators, horses are on the site. So just simple things. When people lose their laptop, it's like their whole life is on board with that laptop and they'd love to get it back. So public awareness, if you know somebody puts a VIN number in, if you go to Google and search that VIN number, it'll come up with It's Long Gone if it's posted there.
Now, has anything been recovered through the site?
Lots of things. Yeah, lots of people have posted the successful finds, but the average public, is the problem with them is that when they find their stuff, they're so excited that they forget to email back to say, hey, I found my iPod or whatever they lost.
Now, a little while ago, I understand you went on a television show, the CBC's Dragon's Den, which is also very similar to, in the United States, Shark Tank, because you wanted to get this idea, you wanted to market this idea and turn it into a business. What was it like being on Dragon's Den, and what was their reaction to your website?
Well, I'd recommend anybody with thick skin go on Dragon's Den. So, yeah, so we went in actually 2 years ago. So it would be, I guess, 2010 we went. And they weren't very receptive to it because rich people, when they lose their stuff, they just buy a new one. So Kevin Leary thought if he lost his cat, he'd just go buy another one. Disposable. I guess if you have a disposable income, you don't need a lost and found. And the general public, if they lose their hubcap off their car, well, they want it back. So I've got people, everything from eyeglasses to their favorite scarf to their favorite hat to a kid's teddy bear, and then it goes on to really big stuff like there's cars, there's jet skis, there's ATVs. So it's not meant for rich people. That was what I learned at Dragon's Den.
What kind of exposure and or interest are you getting outside of Canada with this?
Well, it's creeping into Seattle and Bellingham, so it's pretty slow there because, it's like I said, it's hard to advertise into the U.S. and get the word out that It's Long Gone is available. But it's slowly. It's getting there. It's a word-of-mouth trickle effect, right? So it's like how other big websites started, just the word-of-mouth. And we have a Facebook page, so I believe that more people that join Facebook and then offer It's Long Gone, it'll help the website travel across Canada.
Getting back to Dragon's Den, you went on the show. So what was your goal with the show? Obviously, you wanted to get them to invest in this and turn it into a business. They said no, but is that still your goal?
Yeah, I'd like it to become the biggest lost and found in North America, absolutely. Yeah, and just because five people on a panel have their opinion that it's not a great business or a great idea. I get emails daily that thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to advertise, you know, my cat, my dog, my iPhone or whatever. I get emails all the time that are so, you know, happy that they have the opportunity to advertise their stuff for free.
Now,
you
mentioned the amount of items that are put up on a daily basis, which is impressive, but you also have a large amount of hits per day.
Yeah, it averages, at the beginning it started off, say in the first year, up to 10,000 page views, or new, they call it new page views, mm-hmm. and it'll go up to 50,000 in a month. It bounces up and down.
And
it grows all the time.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, thanks to the media. And you know what? It's a positive thing. That's why the media like it, because it is positive and it does help people and it's free. So
now, are you worried because, I mean, you started this website because, A, you were robbed at work and then you were robbed at home. Are you worried, like some other sites that are out there, that it might also attract a criminal element?
Well, lost and founds have been around in every newspaper forever. So if you're talking about people saying they found something and trying to lure people to come and get it, well, that's up to the public to make their own decision if they're going to go by themselves to go and get their iPhone back, you know, or some kind of extortion or something. You can't stop that. My website, I've never run into that, and I hope it doesn't happen, but dealing with the general public, anything can happen.
The website is called It's Gone, It's Long Gone, and they can check out itslonggone.com, correct?
Yeah, you can check it out. It's free. You can go and surf it and see what all things are missing, and maybe you might see somebody's dog walking down the road, and you kind of wonder, hey, maybe that's on It's Long Gone. You know, go check it out. And maybe put a smile on somebody's face getting their dog back or their phone back. People helping people. It's about time people had something positive to do.
What's the most unusual thing that's been on your site in the last couple of years?
Okay, one time we had a gas mask posted on there, and I don't know why one person would have a gas mask. And then we had somebody lost their dancing lingerie stuff, so that was kind of weird. And then a lot of like modeling portfolios have gone missing, and then people would like those back, I guess. Personal things. And then somebody posted $1 million reward on the website, so that got a lot of media attention because somebody B&E'd a mining company, so that got a lot of attention.
Wow.
$1 million reward. Yeah. So there's lots of rewards on their website for people that everything from their favorite blanket to their ATVs or their dogs, and like people want their stuff back.
Well, as I said in the offset, an interesting concept indeed. I thank you very much, Darren, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, thanks a lot for having me, and hopefully this will talking today will help more people get their stuff back.
Darren Martin from itslonggone.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0135, and you'll find the link to Darren's site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A day after he was arraigned on carjacking charges, a Lowell, Massachusetts man is back behind bars after police say he escaped court in handcuffs and carjacked a second person. 25-year-old Andriano Ortiz Colombo managed to leave the courthouse after his arraignment on charges that included carjacking, assault and battery, and failure to stop for police. Police say he walked across the street and swiped an SUV from the AutoZone parking lot. Officers tracked him down a short time later. He was hiding underneath a trailer when they re-arrested him. Now, why would someone just escape from a court appearance for carjacking only to commit the same crime right across the street from said courthouse? Wow, one reason and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee. I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0135. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's 0135. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here on our next show, on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You've experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.